Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I know we said we were done until January the 5th, but would anyone mind if we squeezed in a visit from Joe? No? Okay then. You're listening to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood, part of the Missed Apex Motorsport Podcast Network, covering F1, Formula E and W Series. I'm Spanners, the host and producer of Missed Apex Podcast. I'm in a shed, but there are many opportunities to hang out with us throughout the year. Are you a sim racer? Come iRacing with us on January the 11th online at 8 p.m. We currently have a 20-car grid so far, so you can get in touch and join us. Three races in MX5s and a fun oval race to finish the night off. Plus, we'll have an open Discord chat and it'll have the likes of myself and Matt Trumpets there to chat to for the evening and do a bit of racing. Matt Trumpets surprisingly fast in an MX5. And we're also opening up the karting entries for April 25th as well. So if you're interested in either, please email me spannersready@gmail.com. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined, as always, on Inside F1 by genuine, legit F1 media legend, Joe Saywood. Good morning, Joe.
Hello. Am I now audible and visible?
Yes, everybody can see.
Yeah, he blocked me. He wouldn't let me do it because I'd disrupt his little diatribes.
It's not a little diatribe. It's a professional and pro intro. It's my rolling audition for Sky Sports or Talk Sport or something like that.
You have such low ambitions.
What? Those things seem amazing from a shed, Joe, I can assure you. Joe, you love sim racing now. You should come iRacing with us.
Since when did I love sim racing?
I don't know. You seem to have a change of heart over 2019.
No. I figured that it was worth keeping an eye on because it is the younger generation. And as most Formula One fans of my age, it's not a good idea. So we need to visit young and convince them that motor racing is a fine thing as long as it doesn't have no noise.
Well,
you know what I mean?
You know what you need to do then, Joe, is you need to GP Plus magazine, your PDF magazine, needs to have a tick. Mm-hmm. You need a TikTok channel. That's what you need.
A TikTok channel, yep. Is that the cool thing these days?
That is the new cool thing, Joe.
I haven't even heard of it. I should write it down. TikTok.
So you dancing to some music while pointing at some text on the screen that appears, and then that directs people to GP Plus magazine.
Doesn't sound like my thing.
No, you can get up dressed up in a cocktail dress or Superman outfit.
Why not?
Yeah. Right. I think you're being very closed off.
I think everybody in the world will be talking to one another in those funny sort of facial jobby things. What do they call those things?
Snapchat? Facial jobby things? Oh, dear, oh, dear. Where's my beat machine?
You know what I mean.
Joe, there's a slightly different tone to the stream this morning because it's the morning. It's the first ever time Missed Apex has streamed in the morning. So obviously here in the UK at 10 a.m., I've got my coffee. You're in France, where I believe you are legally required to drink 2 glasses of wine by 11 a.m. So normal for you.
Oh, I haven't touched a drop. I've had some coffee and that's about it. But I shall be drinking later on today because in France, of course, we celebrate Christmas on the day before Christmas, as you do. Logical.
Yeah, very European. So you have your big Christmas meal today. So this is like, oh, well, in that case, thank you so much for joining us on Christmas
Eve. I have to drive a couple of hours as well before that happens because I'm not going to do it here. So
they definitely frown on
this. This is why we're doing it in the morning because I won't be here this afternoon, you see.
Joe, I've missed not only you here, I've missed, where's the green notebook? I've become accustomed to it and there was no Abu Dhabi green notebook.
Well, yes, that's because basically I just had too much to do. And I, every time I landed somewhere, I took off somewhere else. So I came back from Abu Dhabi and I was in Paris for the FIA Hall of Fame. And then a couple of days later, I actually drove home at that point after that on the Tuesday. And I passed my wife who was going the other way off to grandparental duties. And I flashed my lights at her in an affectionate manner. And that was the last I saw of her for another 3 days when she came home finally. And I left 3 hours later to go back to the FIA prize giving. And then I went to London for the Autosport Awards. I had an audience in London. And then I went to Maranello and went back to England, then drove back to France, arriving at 8 o'clock one morning to see my wife finally and fall over. And then a couple of days after that, we went to Bordeaux to see little people. So there you are.
Little tiny people.
And all of that has happened in the last however long it is. It's not long.
The busy life of an F1 media legend, Joe.
We've actually... An F1 grandpa, you mean? Yeah, that's...
are you finding that when you look around the press room, do you feel very much like a senior, or do you still look around and see some, you look at them and you go, look at those old sweats in the corner?
I don't feel old, that's for sure. That's for sure. There are certainly people who have been there longer than me. But I don't really, unless they're really crumbly, I don't really think of them as being old. And most people in Formula One, you can't really afford to be crumbly because if you start getting crumbly, you can't keep up. So, there are some people probably in their 70s now. I've got 15 years to go before I get there. So, well, not quite, but nearly, it is, it's a tough life. If you actually stop and think about doing 21, and that's just if you do the races, 21 foreign trips all over the world. Plus, if you go testing, if you go to events, whatever. It's a hell of a lot of traveling. So it does get sort of, does knock you down a bit, or it can do if you let it.
Richard from Malden has a relevant question that he sent us in our Slack group. He said, Richard from Malden, managed 103,000 nautical miles for work this year. Does Joe track how many he's flown following F1 around the world?
No, is the answer. I do know that I have an Emirates gold card, and they give you you can find an all-time total. But they only count their what they call miles as opposed to real miles, so I don't really know. But I've got 1.2 million, I think, something like that, on Emirates. And that's as I said, their miles. So I have no idea what I do in a year, but it's certainly over 100,000.
Well, it's not.
If you go to Australia and back, you've done 25. So, it's not hard to get to Australia and back, go to Japan and back, go to China and back. You're practically there already.
I mean, it's not all bad, though. I imagine as someone with as much influence as you in the F1 sphere, the teams are falling over themselves to adorn you in treasures. And I have two questions from tweeters.
Adorn me in treasures. It sounds like I'm sort of virgin. No, not virgin. What's that? Oh, Jesus, in a manger, lots of presents arriving from wise men and things.
I do apologise. I'm writing a semi-autobiographical historical drama based on space aliens in the Middle Ages. So I apologise. My two worlds briefly melded there. So two questions. One is from Papa McBurb, who says, which presents has Joe had the most use out of from an F1 personality? And Mr. B. Bar Snarf says, could you please ask Joe what the teams get him as a Christmas present to keep him sweet?
I can answer the F1 personality one very quickly, which is I can't remember ever being given anything by an F1 personality.
Not a driver?
You get the occasional Christmas card. I can't remember. I mean, it's a long time. The days when you were showered in gifts, and we were never really showered in gifts, but the days of being showered in gifts are long gone. They're far too busy spending their money on research and development rather than trying to please the press. So that's an easy one. As to the most useful Christmas present I've had, again, I can't, you know, can't remember any of them, so I can't really answer that one. As I was just saying, you know, I have a very nice model of a Ferrari, having been to Maranello, but
show
it cost
it
me a fortune to, you want me to do it?
It cost you a fortune. They charged you a fortune.
No. I mean, you have to pay to go there. You know, they're not paying your airfares or flying you there in private jets, you know. So by the time I got there and got back, I'd probably spent the best part of, I don't know, 300 quid or something. So to be given a model of a Ferrari was nice, but, you know, it was quite an expensive model. I could probably buy one. I don't know. But, you know, the point is that they're very nicely. I have a model of Sebastian Vettel's 2019 car. But if I try to unwrap it and take the lid off and all the rest of it, it'll take forever. But it's about this big.
So yeah, it's in a glass case. I mean, you showed me it earlier. I mean, it does look spectacular. I think those models are actually quite a bit more expensive than what you paid for. Certainly to the point
more
where...
More than 300 quid, really?
I reckon so.
Crumbs, I mean, oops.
Crumbs. if that was in my house, within seconds, mm-hmm. someone will take the glass off and will be like racing it around going vroom, you know, yeah. So, you know,
feel free to,
if you do do that, that's a thing that you can film yourself doing and put on TikTok.
Somewhere I have a McLaren the same sort of size, but it's well hidden away. In fact, it's so well hidden, I don't know where it is. And it's a, in a sort of boxy thing signed by Mika Häkkinen. So it's quite old now, I suppose.
Chat room's asking to see it. Perhaps we'll dig it out towards the end of the stream, Joe. Obviously, there's some huge Ferrari news that has broken in the last 24 hours. And so just that, this is just to say, like, we're getting to that. But first, I want to ask you about GP Plus magazine, because this is the prime time to get it. And if you've forgotten to get someone a Christmas present who is an F1 fan, a subscription to GP Plus magazine might be in order.
Very much so. And you can also, you have a choice of two options. One is you can buy them just the subscription for 1 year, or you can buy them what we call the bundle. And the bundle buys you, this year you'll get 299 magazines in the bundle, which is the entire Grand Prix Plus backlog, going back to 2007. So you can have it all inside your own computer or device, whatever. Just imagine all that shelf space. Just throw away all those Autosports, lob them in the bin, mush them up, sell them to be turned into papier-mâché, whatever they call the stuff, you know.
Too soon, and, Joe, too soon. Still, the body's still warm, Joe. It's
no, listen, part of that body is me, you remember. I used to be there for 10 years, so suggesting people throw them in the bin is quite upsetting to me in a way. But it's the shelf space. I used to have 20 years of Autosports, and it weighed a ton and a half, and it took up an entire room. So in the end of the day, if you can put it all in one little folder in a computer, how good does it get? If I was Autosport, actually, to be quite honest, I would do the really boring task of going through the whole thing, scanning every single edition, putting them all into forms that you can use, and then having folders and selling them, because people would buy them, maybe. I don't know.
So you have a PDF, a magazine, you do reviews that come out very shortly after the race. It's proper journalism. It's not a little 100-word things, this is what happened, and then that is what happened. It's proper Joe-style reading. You have a weird subscription model, though, where you go, right, let's just buy it.
You get it for the year.
For the whole year.
You get it for the December to December, and if you don't download it by December the 31st at midnight, it stops. Logically speaking, that may sound a bit odd, but it's just easier to do.
Go to flatoutpublishing.com or search for Joe Sayward GP Plus magazine for more info. Joe.
Or GrandPrixPlus.com even.
GrandPrixPlus.com.
It might be the easier way of doing it. It's direct route, you know.
Everyone's a critic. Yeah. Joe, big news. Big news in F1 in the off-season. Just as we're all getting ready for our Christmas dinner, Ferrari announced the end of Sebastian Vettel's career. 5 years for Charles Leclerc. Long live the Red King.
Hang on a minute. It's not the end of Sebastian Vettel,
isn't it?
No, not really. It just means that Charles Leclerc is going to stay there for 5 years. It doesn't mean Sebastian Vettel won't stay there for 5 years as well. I mean, I admit it's quite unlikely that Sebastian Vettel will stay there for 5 years, but nonetheless, it doesn't mean definitely the end of anything. And it also, you know, I would say it's more likely that you won't see Lewis Hamilton going there. Not that I think Lewis Hamilton's ever going to go there, to be honest. But, you know, why would you, if Charles Leclerc is your number one for 5 years, effectively, even if it's not written down in the contract, you don't want someone who's better, or you don't want someone who's Well, you do want someone who's better, but you don't want someone there who's going to disrupt, you know, upset the apple cart.
Well, I mean,
so what you want is, hang on, what you want is a good one and a half, you know, a good number one and a half, not another number one, because two number ones, it's Superman in telephone boxes, you know, too many of them don't fit.
So he needs his Bottas.
Ouch. That was unkind to Valtteri, but yes, that is true.
Okay, but haven't you kind of...
Let's be fair, you know, proven people who've done that. We'll look at Barrichello and Eddie Irvine and these, Felipe Massa, to be unkind. They're number one and a half. So they get paid very well. Gerhard Berger was a number one and a half for many, many years as well. So they get paid vast amounts of money, but to basically not be too fast, just keep the other bloke away, you know. But what you don't want is what happened in Brazil, where the two Ferrari guys collide with one another, and who suffers the most on that one? The team does. This is a point they made when I was in Maranello the other day.
They did. It came up.
Yes, it did. So, I know we discussed pretty much everything. It was quite a good event for that. We even discussed the legality of the cars.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. There's a lot to unpack there. So let's start with the Brazil incident. Do you think that Brazil incident changed their thinking on the status of their drivers?
Not really, no. I think it was always going to happen if they let it run. But, you know, what choice do they have but to let it run? So they basically said that it was good. They didn't say it was good. They said it was bad. But if you're looking for positives in a negative situation, it basically both drivers realized that it'd been a total screw up and Ferrari had been the victim of it. So it was in their interest not to do it again. So whether they'll think that way when it comes to the next time they're going in a similar situation is another question. But, you know, it does give Ferrari a little bit more sort of, listen, boys, don't be silly. The school teacher kind of approach, which they're not really like that, but, you know, because racing drivers don't like being told what to do. They are individualists. So handling them, this is one thing that Toto Wolff does very well, is it's handling the drivers and making sure that everybody's happy, even if they're not happy, you know, thinking they're happy. Valtteri Bottas is always happy because he might nearly get there one day, you know. The fact that he probably won't is another problem, but you know, Lewis keeps getting better and better. So as much as Valtteri gets better and better, it's a bit like Williams saying they've got to get better and better, and they are going to get better and better. The trouble is they've got to get it better and better twice as fast as everybody else, because everyone's getting better and better all the time.
So. I just want to tie up to slightly, there's a gap, I think, between a couple of things you said. You sort of hinted at me saying that I was wrong to say that this really meant anything for Vettel. The next phrase was that you wouldn't want to bring in a Hamilton-type figure to be another number one. You don't want another number one with Charles Leclerc there for 5 years. Mm. But for next season, he's got Sebastian Vettel. So what is the status going to be next season? Surely the five-year deal, as meaningless as contracts are, it's a huge flag in the ground, a Leclerc-shaped flag that says, he's our boy, he's number one. There's not...
Yes. It is, but it's also to stop him going somewhere else. It's also, it's a message, if you like, to Max Verstappen as well, which is, if you're going to do it, you're going to have to do it where you are, sonny boy, or wait until Lewis goes, whatever. You know, it is basically saying this is our horse and this is the one we're riding for the next 5 years. Now, who rides alongside him is another matter, but I don't see the logic in putting two number ones together, because every time we've seen it in Formula One history, it's ended badly. So basically, you want to try and avoid it. What you want is to have somebody who's almost as good, but not quite. And I think Bottas is a very good example of that. And yet he's still hungry and still growing and all these other things, you know. And I think, to be honest, if I was running Ferrari, you might look at having a Hülkenberg in there. The Hulk is pretty damn good, but I don't think he's a number one, because otherwise he would have broken through. I think he might have broken through at one point, you know, but time passes and ambitions get blunted and enough money thrown at you.
Joe, you're talking as if there's a seat up for grabs.
No, I'm not talking as if there's a seat up for grabs, but there could be a seat up for grabs at the end of 2020, simply because Sebastian might say, well, I don't really want to be
1.5.
Beaten by Charles Leclerc again and again and again. He's not thinking of it that way, I'm sure. He's just thinking about how can I get better and beat him back. But when all is said and done, the tick-tock of the clock continues, and Sebastian ain't getting any younger, and Charles isn't getting any younger, and none of us are getting any younger, are we? But the fact is that Sebastian's not going to be recovering that wildness of youth that some of these people have.
So I think a lot of people, not just me, have leapt onto what does this mean to Sebastian Vettel, just because he's been a fabric of the sport for a decade, four-time world champion. That's big news that his teammate now has a four-year longer contract than him at Maranello. That's big news. But what about for the lad himself? In the chat room here, Mark says, brave for Charles, in my opinion, or Charles, in my opinion. Ferrari have had some ups and downs, but they've also had some long downs over the years. A good decision for Leclerc himself?
I don't see why not. I mean, they are... They could become a team that will win a number of years consecutively. If they do that, Charles will be world champion several times. If it doesn't work out at the end of 5 years, how old will Charles be? He'll still be young enough to go off to another team,
yeah,
and still win world championships. You know, so I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's a great vote of confidence in Ferrari. It's a vote of Ferrari confidence in him. And I think that as a relationship, and I'm sure he's going to be well paid. I don't think money's going to be his problem.
I hear he's having to scrape by on $9 million a year that he's going to be locked into.
Well, that's not a lot in the modern age, but it won't be that. I can tell you that in advance. It'll be at least twice as that, and there'll be an escalator factor every year. So, $9 million is nothing. In Formula One, top level driving terms, 20 million is nothing. You're talking, Sebastian's on about 50, maybe. I don't know. Who knows? The other thing is there's also bonuses, and a lot of the deals these days are based on bonuses. So, you know, you have 100,000 a point or something like that. That depends on who you are. Some of them are not, smaller teams might do that. Bigger teams, when you're scoring 200 or 300 points, is probably not a good idea to 100,000 a point, is it?
I always wonder, like, when you have a certain amount of money, surely, I've got to get that extra point because I need another £100,000. I mean, I'd love to find out one day if there is still that incentive, but there's a point score element to it as well. I suppose it makes it that.
Of course. Yeah. Of course there is. I'm earning more than him, therefore I'm better than him. Absolutely. I mean, what good is money? At the end of the day, if you've got enough, you've got enough. Money is it's one of these things that people spend their lives fighting to get, and then they don't really know why. It's just because once you've got enough, you've got enough. The question is, what is enough? And that's an interesting reflection, because as you go up the ladder of earnings, your ambitions grow. So, you don't want to travel in the front end of an airplane. It's so dull mixing with those people in first class, darling. One simply needs an executive jet, this kind of thing. So the ambitions go up with the money. But, I think... as soon as you get into Formula One, fundamentally, unless you're a paid driver, you've got enough money.
Okay, well, I'll stop worrying about poor Charles Leclerc there. Interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about him. He'll be happy ever after, I'm sure.
Interesting that you mentioned that this somewhat closes the door on Max Verstappen. You get the impression Max Verstappen would definitely want to go into a team as an out and out number one. But it's almost as if you're implying
he is an out and out number one. What are you talking about?
No, that's what I'm saying. He wouldn't want to go to Ferrari to be in an equal fight with Charles Leclerc.
I don't think he'd bother about that because he think he's going to be quicker. They all think they're going to be quicker than the other bloke until they meet somebody they can't beat. It's normal.
But if you wanted to secure your place at a team, probably the number one tactic to avoid would be to be openly hostile and accusing them of cheating. Do you think that has that had an effect on...
If he's the fastest bloke out there, they'd still hire him.
Really?
I mean, look, Fernando Alonso went back to McLaren. What more evidence do you want? After what happened in 2007, where he basically blackmailed the team caused their downfall. And then he went back again a few years later because it suited their purpose and he needed somewhere to go. So
this blackmail thing...
It's called pragmatism.
I only heard of the alleged blackmailing recently.
You don't have to use alleged.
Oh, okay.
It's fairly well. established.
So he was actually asking the team to hamper
he
Hamilton.
Was telling the team, he was telling the team that they needed to favour him over Lewis, or else he'd go to the FIA and tell them about things to do with the supposed dossier from Ferrari, which is, you know.
Right.
Which is basically what happened after that is that Ron Dennis picked up the phone and called Alonso's bluff by ringing the FIA and saying, oh, by the way, this is the situation. And of course, you know, it wasn't necessarily the smartest thing to do, but it basically, he was lucky not to be fired on the spot, actually. There were, I believe, Mr. Whitmarsh was rather keen on firing him. But one, you know, at the end of the day, that's not the way to behave. And this is why Fernando Alonso has two world championships, because he's a bad influence within a team, because he's so ambitious and so keen to do well that there are no limits. And which is why wherever he's gone, it's tended to be unpleasant.
He seems like such a nice guy on Twitter as well. It's amazing to think he had that persona.
Didn't he tell somebody off? I saw on Twitter.
Yes, it was our tech man from Birmingham, Matthew Summerfield, who writes for motorsport.com.
Well, I'm amazed that Fernando Alonso is actually bothering to see what's being said on Twitter. He must have nothing else to do.
It was so weird. Someone was just making a joke about how his Renault car was powered by a team that produced GP2 engines. So he was quoting back the quote of Alonso in Honda saying GP2 engine, GP2 engine. And Fernando
Alonso. What you forget here is at this particular moment, Mr. Alonso is very sensitive on the subject of Honda. He's trying to get his bottom into an Andretti Honda next year for the Indy 500, because he's worked out he's not going to win it in any other kind of car. So he doesn't want people to bring up the fact that he called Honda engines GP2 engines and upset Honda to an extent. You know, if you don't understand the Japanese psyche, you really shouldn't be driving for them, because, you know, he's now driven for Honda and Toyota, and both of them haven't kept him, have they? And they don't work in the same way. So if you deeply insult them, they don't forget it. And so he's trying very hard to get into the Andretti car for the Indy 500 next year. And obviously people mentioning this is uncomfortable for him. Otherwise, why on earth would you be responding to journalists, to be honest? I mean, who responds? Not many, I mean.
It's strange because he often quotes from samurai culture. So you would think he would have some understanding of Japanese culture.
Well, he clearly doesn't.
So we've just had some. This is a topic that's people are interested in the chat room. So I'm just going to roll with it for a second before we go back to Maranello. Somebody's saying basically, what's the chances? Here we go. Michael Brown. Hello, live stream, by the way. You can join us by searching for Missed Apex Podcast on YouTube. Subscribe to us and you can chat live while I talk to Joe and all the others. And Michael Brown has said, any chance of Alonso returning to Renault if Danny Ric moves? Is there any chance of an Alonso comeback at all?
I don't think there's anybody who wants him. I mean, they want his talent, but they don't want the baggage that comes with it. So, and, you know, he's not a spring chicken anymore. And he's got his ambitions. He realizes he's not going to win the world championship again. And so he's busy going off and doing other things. So he'll have a record that will be unique. So, you know, he's not going to win the Dakar first time out unless there's a miracle. He could win the 500. But basically he just wants to win as much as possible and in as varied, things as possible to leave a legacy, because he didn't win the 5 world championships his talent should have got him.
The chat room is not being as kind as you at all, Joe, and you're not even
perhaps
being that
not,
kind.
But they don't have to deal with him directly.
So Dr. Vidya Gaim, hello, Doctor. Maybe he should not have been so mean to Honda. Racing fan says maybe he should apologise. That I don't think, is there a chance of that? Alonso could come out and just go, hey, realise I've been a bit harsh over the years. Sorry about that. With age has come wisdom, and I'm ready for my return. I can't see it.
That's not a stupid idea, actually, but whether they forgive him is another matter, I don't know. They are Japanese people. I worked with the Japanese for 25 years, and you can push them up to a point, and if you push them beyond that point, it's very dangerous territory. Like, bang. I mean, not in literal terms, obviously, but in employment terms, there's a point at which they just say, no, that's the end of that. Thanks. We don't need you anymore. So you have to be really careful. And I think that Alonso stepped over the line in that McLaren phase. And I think that, you know, that he realizes now that he's not going to get a decent Chevrolet at Indy, and that's the only choice. So the only way he's going to win the 500 is with a Honda.
Well, wait a minute. Sorry, Joe. I'm just getting the producer in my ear. Yeah, we would just like to clarify that the opinion that Japanese people shoot people who cross them past a certain point is the opinion of Joe Sayward and not that of Missed Apex podcast.
I didn't say that. I said that you get fired. I mean, the implication is, you know.
Okay, producer's happy with that, Joe. Producer's happy. We're good. Can we go back to Maranello, can we?
I'm going to cough again now, so you need to mark it down.
No. Look, I'll mute it. Go for it. There we go. Yeah, the magic of production. Let's go back to Maranello. So this forum that I'm imagining, did they just held court with some journalists and actually spoke?
Well, it wasn't exactly a forum. It was a lunch, and there were about, I don't know, there were probably 15, 20 maybe.
Oh, wow. An elite.
No more than that. It was a very select group.
The elite.
In part because some couldn't get there, in part because the French were on strike and everything. And there were, well, it's true. There were all kinds of problems for a number of people. So getting there wasn't as easy as it might have been. But no, it wasn't a huge group.
The legal teams in my ear, no, they said, no, that tracks. That's all fine. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, very good. So it was about 15 of us, 20 of us, whatever it was, sitting around the table and just asking any question you liked. And it was very honest. There was a sort of off the record element to it, which consisted, I think, of about three words in the end.
Okay.
Which were deemed to be off the record. And I can't tell you what they were.
Were two of them fuel flow?
No. They answered the fuel flow question. They answered all the questions fairly directly. And I think there was a key point at which, and I think it's a very valid point, that Louis Camilleri, who is the CEO of the main Ferrari company, said, which is, he said, people forget, everyone accuses us of cheating, but people forget that we are a listed company on the stock exchange, and you can't do this kind of thing. And he's absolutely right, in as much as the risk factor. It's a bit like that story about Aston Martin the other day, which was run, Lawrence Stroll is going to buy into Aston Martin.
Okay.
That influenced the stock market. That is illegal. Ooh. You're not allowed to influence the stock market. You know, journalists can write stories, but, you know, there was no comment from anybody because basically if there had been an offer from Stroll, Aston Martin would have had to announce it anyway. Now they announced something a few days later, which was people have shown some interest in buying into the company. But at the time that story went out, what happened? I'm sure that they got a call from the market regulator saying, what's going on here? Who's manipulating the stock? Because somebody was. And as a journalist, you have to be very careful with those kind of stories because you can get wrapped up in it. You know, who is the sourcing on that story? There was no sourcing given. You know, there was no element, you can just put it down to journalistic enthusiasm if you like, but somebody gave that story to the journalist in question for a reason. And what that reason was, it doesn't make sense that it was Stroll because, you know, if you raise the price of the stock, you raise the price of the buying the company or buying slices of the company. So it's not going to be him, but it might be somebody who doesn't want it to happen.
Okay.
So there's all kinds of things you have to be aware of, but I'm sure that the stock market regulators will have had a look at that and went, this isn't right. Because it went 20% in the morning. You know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, since we're on that, sorry, we're delaying going back to Maranello again. Since we're on that, so what is this story? There was a rumor that Lawrence Stroll.
There was a story that was published that said Lawrence Stroll was going to buy into Aston Martin, buy control, da-di-da-di-da. And you know, the Force Indias would become Aston Martin. Now, there's a lot of elements to that that kind of make sense. One is that Aston Martin, Red Bull, Honda doesn't make sense at all. You know, just doesn't make sense. So, but Aston Martin and Red Bull are so tightly bound together in their industrial side, i.e. building Aston Martin fancy road cars, that it's hard to separate them. So, you know, the idea that Aston Martin could move across and have a whole team. Yes, it's possible they could do that. And it would be helped by the fact that Aston Martin is 5% owned by Mercedes-Benz. Not many people know that, but it is. So you could have Mercedes-Benz engines and they could work a deal whereby they were badged Aston Martin, and then you get a full Aston Martin team, which looks good. You know. So in terms of buying the stock, the company's worth, I don't know, $1.5 billion or something like that. And to be honest, I mean, you don't spend your own money on things like that. You borrow it. But Stroll doesn't, you know, he's not going to spend $1.5 billion buying out everybody else. I don't think he might. You never know. He's an ambitious fellow. But it is, when you're dealing with stock market companies, you have to be very careful. That's all I'm saying. That's the reason it came up. Anyway, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I think largely because Aston Martin stock has dropped so much, it started at £19 a share and was down to sort of £5 last time I looked, you know, so it's cheap. Now, whether it's the right valuation is another question. But, you know, that's for cleverer people than me to work out what the company's worth. They've got this new SUV coming, and that bumped the stock a few percent when it was announced. But it fell back again after that. So, yeah, we'll have to see how they do.
Okay, well, I'm sure there's smart listeners out there who've kept track of all that. Money, it means nothing to me. When I hear like several hundred thousand or several million, I never know whether it's a surprisingly big amount or surprisingly little. The question I would have as an F1 fan is, Lawrence Stroll, every time I hear anything to do with him and car, I assume it's in the betterment of Lance Stroll. Is there some link back into F1?
No. It's not all about Lance Stroll. It's also about the fact that, you know, his father has been passionate about cars forever. He owns lots of very expensive Ferraris. He bought one of the most expensive Ferraris ever sold not long ago, a couple of years ago. He paid 20-odd million for it. He owns the Mont Tremblant racetrack in Canada, which he paid to have completely rebuilt. You know, he's a very wealthy man with a passion for cars. So just because his son happens to be a racing driver doesn't mean everything is about Lance. It's not all about Lance. And, you know, one day, when they, you know, I don't know how long it'll take them to realize, or maybe Lance will surprise us all and develop into a Grand Prix winner.
But maybe.
Well, he's been on the podium. He's been on the podium several times, you know, so you can't knock it.
Two times when everybody else exploded.
Yes, I know. But how many times has Hülkenberg been on the podium?
Yeah.
And we think of Hülkenberg as being a great driver, and we don't think of Stroll as being a great driver. That's not fair. You have to balance, you know, it's all about results. And yes, on, you know, his podiums may have occurred on days when everyone else fell off, but there's a moral in that too, mm-hmm. which is he's very good at difficult races. He's very good in the wet. You know, there's lots of things. He's lousy at qualifying. And that's why he's weak fundamentally, because he always qualifies below where he should be.
19-1.
He has to make up. Yes, but he has to make it up. In the races. So that makes his job harder in the races. So he has to improve his qualifying. And if he does that, maybe people will look at him differently. But you can't just write him off. He's not, you know, he's not the next Lewis Hamilton, but he's not next Chuck Leclerc, but he is, he's not a complete waste of space.
I think if you didn't know about his history and the package he came in with, I think you might well say, yeah, he's a legitimate, you know, he's come through the series, he's quick, he's fast, he's obviously got a bit of racing skill, but you would probably have said, at this point, you would have said, oh, Williams shouldn't retain him. And you would have been very surprised at a Force India type unit hiring him.
No, in that respect, did he do enough at Williams to warrant staying in Formula One if he wasn't paying for it? No, he didn't. But, you know, the fact, you know, remember Maldonado won a Grand Prix. So, you know, weird things can happen.
Which, but, according to you, proves he's the best driver in the world.
Well, not according to me. He's quick, a bit like Grosjean, you know, doesn't always get to the finish. But, you know, being quick over one lap is not the goal, as it's being quick over 70 laps. That's the key. And being consistently quick over 70. If you look at the results in the World Championship, look at Lewis. He finished every single race. The only thing I can think of he did wrong all year, seriously wrong, is that business with Albon, which was just a mistake. And he said as much instantly. He didn't try and hide it. He didn't make excuses. He said, my mistake. I felt so sorry for Albon because it really did screw him up, not just in the race. And he's robbed him of his first podium. Yeah. He took away two places in the World Championship as well. It was a rough break for him. But he's, you know, he's a smart guy. And that's what actually takes champions are smart guys who take the rough with the smooth. They don't get excited about things too much. They just keep delivering. Look at Max Verstappen's finishing record as well. He had two incidents when he retired, but beyond that, he finished in the points every single time. So, and that's what you've got to do. And look at Albon when he got into the Red Bull. He was in the points every single time, up until Lewis. Lewis knocked him out of the points on that one occasion. But otherwise, he was in the points every single time in the Red Bull anyway.
Interesting. The two guys on the grid who I would immediately come to mind of putting their hand up and saying, hey, my bad, is Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel. It's a champion's mentality.
Well, Sebastian's not as good at doing it as
not as good as
Lewis. No, because look what happened in Brazil. You know, who did that to me?
Oh yeah, and Baku as well. But there has been occasions. No, you're absolutely right.
No, I think that if you were going to say who are the most honest guys out there, I would say actually Kimi. All yours or screw up kind of thing. You know. But Kimi doesn't screw up very often, and he's very fair racy. You know, it's one of the things I like about him. If you see Kimi and Lewis racing together, it's actually lovely to watch because you know neither of them's going to be a. Are you going to bleep that?
Yeah, of course I'm going to bleep. It's 10 o'clock in the morning, Joe. 40, right? Okay,
sorry.
That's okay. Don't worry about that. We're just pleased to have you here. You're listening to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood. Please excuse us. Well, we have a word from our sponsor.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I hope you enjoyed that word from our sponsor. It's just something I've heard off of the telly from the olden days, and I wanted to say it too. You're listening to Inside F1. Of course, we are very grateful to Joe Saywood for coming and gracing us in the shed almost monthly. I think we've had at least 12 Inside F1s with Joe this year, for which we're incredibly grateful. Go and make sure you check out his blog and his race reviews, as well as GP Plus magazine at gpplus.com. You can find all the shows that we've done here, including the great interviews we've had throughout the course of the year with Chris Medland, Alex Brundle, Matthew Summerfield, Matthew Carter, all our race reviews, all our new shows, by going to MissedApexPodcast.com. Please do subscribe on your podcatcher thingy. Make sure that you're subscribed there so you're downloading it every week. Don't rely on me to do an internet social media type post. I will invariably forget. Back to Formula One. Let's use Joe's expertise to delve into the continuing saga of Williams doing unexpected things. They've announced that Dan Ticktum is going to have some kind of role at Williams or has joined their academy. What's going on there and what is a Ticktum?
The cynic in me says there's probably money involved and he'll be paying it. But I'm not sure he's got an awful lot. So generally speaking, Williams nowadays don't hire anybody unless there's a financial benefit from it. George Russell's there because of a deal on the engines. Robert Kubica was there because of the oil company sponsorship he bought with him. Latifi was there for obvious reasons because Latifi is one of the richest people in the world, probably. not really in comparison to the really big ones, but nonetheless, well above Spanners and I, that's for sure.
No, it just goes to show that with a little hard work and billions of pounds worth of personal fortune, you can achieve anything.
Well, you can up to a point. We'll see how Nicholas does. But he's a pretty good racing driver, so we'll see. Anyway, my view of that is, generally speaking, anybody who's mixed up with Williams is money involved somehow. So who's paying for it, I don't know. But he has a drive in Formula 2 with Dams, and he doesn't have a super license. I saw somebody ask that question because he hasn't done enough to earn one. And we'll have to see. I mean, he's quick, clearly, but he's a little bit on the wild side. He did get banned in his youth.
Yeah.
For 2 years. He obviously screwed up in Japan in a fairly monumental way. Red Bull dropped him.
The more I hear about Tictum, the more I'm convinced that we're just going to have to get used to his name, and he's going to end up in F1 some way or another. Firstly, why is he on the radar? Is he like some spectacular talent, or is it just his bad boy reputation that keeps him?
No, he's quick. There's no question about him being quick when it's all holding together. But the thing is, he seems to be a little bit wild. Now, whether he calms down enough to make it to Formula 1 is another matter. The other thing is, you know, people have got to believe in him to get him into Formula 1, because he doesn't have the money to pay his way in, I don't think.
He doesn't? You don't think?
I don't think so, no. Otherwise, why would you be with Red Bull, you know? I think that he's had a lot of chances, and he's not made the most of all of them. So, no, I think we'll have to see how he does. But, that, you know, back in the old days, and this is even before my time, but, you know, James Hunt was never going to make it. He was this sort of brawler and crasher. Hunt the Shunt, they used to call him. And he's
got away with that, to be
honest. Champion. So, well, there are worse names if your name's Hunt. Yeah, but he came to Formula One and he won a world championship. So, you know, sometimes when they are really quick. Now, whether he's really, really, really quick, got that little bit extra, we don't know. But there are certainly some people who think he does, which is why he's still going, I suppose.
So I'm not an expert on Formula 2, but Dams is a big team in F2.
Yeah.
So you think that you either have to be minted or really talented to get a top drive in?
Well, I think he's the really talented. I think his teammate's paying for most of it. So
his teammate being?
Being Mr. Galial, I believe. And Mr. Galial comes from Indonesia, where they have a lot of Kentucky Fried Chicken, which his daddy owns. And therefore, they can afford to pay for quite a lot of things. So if he's willing to pay an X amount at Dams to be in a top team, the additional money that they get from him is spent to employ Tictum, or to give Tictum a better deal. It kind of makes sense.
Okay. Well, it's an interesting one. I'm now, to be honest, I'm massively distracted because all I can think about is some fried chicken. And that's
okay. You're obviously chicken and stout coming up.
Now the stout chat was pre-show, Joe. That was between you and I. Okay, I'll admit.
Was it? Okay, right.
Fine. I'll have to admit it now on the main show. It's a 10 o'clock show. First time we've done a morning show. The cold, dewy covered stout in my fridge was very tempting, but 10 o'clock in the morning. No, come on. I'm a decent British man. I've got to wait till regulation pub opening hours, which is what, like 11:30, isn't it? Which we're creeping towards.
Oh, yes, of course, over there you're behind us, aren't you?
So, no, it's not. It's not France, Joe. It's not wine for breakfast. I'm looking at the questions we got. Sorry, completely distracted thinking about if there's going to be KFC sponsorship on an F1 car at some point in the future, because that is, frankly, going to break me.
Well, I don't know what to say about that, really. I mean, I can look at a car going by and not necessarily have massive cravings for what's on the side.
No, I'm an advertiser's dream. They will flash a brand in front of me, and I go, I quite fancy some Gillette.
Okay, yeah, I'm too cynical for that.
No, I'm not. Here's a lighter question from Lawrence, not Lawrence Stroll, Lawrence Wells on Twitter. Since we're talking about France and wine habits, he'd like to know more about you, sir. What is your favourite cheese, and have you gone extra cheesy since you moved to France?
What an extraordinary question. Have I gone more cheesy? Yes, because there's more choices. I think Charles de Gaulle, I can't remember the exact number, but Charles de Gaulle said, how can you possibly govern a country with 345 cheeses or something? And Britain, you know, you've got about Actually, you don't even have as many as you used to in the old days. There's some people doing new ones nowadays, but you know, things like Red Leicester and Sage Derby have disappeared. But you basically got cheddar, you know, which is dull. Whereas in France, every little village has its own one.
So, does it? There
yes,
you go.
I'm now not far from the place called Neufchâtel, where you have it's a sharp cheese, but it's made in heart shapes. So.
Oh. Yeah, you're listening to the Cheese Hour with Mist Apex Podcast. Myself, I like a nice herby roulade. Thanks for asking, Lawrence. Didn't care
well,
about
in that
mine.
Case, if you want the honest truth, I think I like a Mondor.
A Mondor. Very good. I'm going to go and research that. Well, that's enough of Inside Joe.
Or Roblechon. That's another one.
Let's get back to Inside F1 then, okay, with some F1-y type questions. At this time of the year, just before Christmas and New Year, I guess you can look back or you can look forward. But Ben Ford, at Ben Ford, is offering you a Christmas wish, Joe. He's saying, what does Joe Sayward wish to happen in F1 by this time next year? And he also says, Happy Christmas and Happy New Year, Joe and Mist Apex. Same to you, Ben. What do you wish for F1 next year?
I wish that we'd had a great year of racing and we have a nice, quiet negotiation on the commercial front and everything's organised because it needs to be by December 31 next year. So just good racing. That's what we want. And we've had very good racing this year, apart from the French Grand Prix. I think most of them were pretty exciting races. If you knew, you know, if you had an idea what you were looking at, because you need to have the TV commentators explaining quite a lot of stuff, but they were all very close and exciting. So, apart from the French Grand Prix, and they are changing the track in France.
Oh, tell me.
Well, I don't know exact details, but I understand they're changing the track to try to make it better for racing. How they're going to do that, I don't know.
Well, they've got the freedom, haven't they? I guess it's just a different paint scheme.
Well, it's an expensive freedom to have.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yes, it's like Abu Dhabi have got the freedom, haven't they? Well, they haven't actually, because they've got buildings in all the wrong places, because Abu Dhabi never produces a very good race. And they built this thing. They designed it. It's the perfect racetrack in terms of design, and that doesn't work for modern F1 cars. So, but in order to change it, you need to fill in harbours and knock down buildings, you know, so it's quite difficult to do. Anyway, it's a bit like Monaco. You know, sometimes there's not much you can do at Monaco, but Monaco's never a dull race because it is what it is, you know.
Yeah, half points, end of season, spectacular at Monaco. Happy with that. Happy with that.
The weather might not be quite so good at the end of the year.
It was a real shame, the negativity at the start of the year. That must have really hurt Liberty with this new property. And then this real, like, fanatical uprising of F1 is dead. It's dead and buried. And this was all after France, which was like race 7.
That happens every year. Whenever there's a bad race, everybody who's got it in for Formula One, which are lots of people, because you know there's the old Bernie gang who are still powerful in some respects. So the Formula E mob who just sort of try to down, you know, say we're wonderful and Formula One's not. You know, racing milk floats is the way to go in the future.
I wish you'd say what you mean, Joe. I hate it when you're just keeping it all inside.
But yeah. I mean, yeah, let's not go there. Everybody's got it in for Formula One because it's the top, and that actually says it all, really. It's because it's the top, and it's because it's the best. And who cares what they think, to be honest? It's still going well. The numbers are up. I see there was a press release the other day about the spectator numbers, TV spectating numbers, which is up, which is unusual.
Worldwide.
Yeah. In the modern, there are some countries where nothing happens at all because if you're pay per view, who the hell is going to sign up to watch it?
Okay, so I guess like this, the section I had planned to talk to you about is basically, you know, the dawn of Liberty and how they're getting on, because we've ended the decade with Liberty. Yeah. But one of the biggest impacts from the UK audience, which is still one of the big F1 audiences, was the Sky effect. And I was going to ask you a personal question, under no obligation to answer, but just if you noticed any effect on your interactions with F1 fans. Obviously, you're reliant on people subscribing to you, because from a Mist Apex point of view, we've had a complete bumper year. And it's almost as if the feeling I've got is that the Netflix, the Drive to Survive, almost seems to have countered any effects that going to Sky or going to pay-per-view.
Yeah,
it's nothing
I
against
agree,
Sky.
It has. Yeah. Globally speaking, it has. The Netflix thing was, I just wrote a season review for my newsletter, the JSBM newsletter. And in that, I made the point that probably the most important thing for Formula One this year was not Lewis's sixth championship with Netflix, because it humanized the sport. It made Gunter Steiner a star. It basically told stories behind the scenes, and that's people like people. And if we forget that, you know, some people in Formula One think that Formula One's about machines. It's not. It's about relating to people. And if we forget to relate to people, we're going to lose it.
It's a soap opera.
Yes, it is. It's a soap opera, but we don't necessarily need to go in quite the extreme versions we've seen in the past, some of them.
Yeah, we do. We need booing.
Yeah, we've still had, you know, what was that man with the strange beard called? I can't remember his name.
Father Christmas.
Not that one.
Sorry.
The one who was sponsoring Haas.
William Story.
Well, whatever his name was. You see, the point is that whatever his name was, he's going to be deeply upset that I can't remember his name. Because his whole purpose of being there was just to promote himself. So, I don't know. You always get weirdos in Formula One, and he certainly lived up to that.
Well, we're on him. I don't know if
Well, a weirdo is not a legally challenging.
No, it's fine. I don't
You're
know.
You're a weirdo. Come on, let's face it.
How dare you, sir? I don't know if I've said this on the podcast, but we saw William Story. He put out this tweet. A really oddly low frame rate video of him driving out in a Renault car, and he'd made it out as if he was doing some collaboration with the Renault F1 team, whereas in fact it very much seemed like it was a experience day that had Renault branding on it that you could just purchase, and he'd like passed it off as like, ah, oh, this is me in bed with Renault because I'm still in the F1 clique. It's just so weird.
Well, I don't know. It's just a sad story if you ask me. But there we are. I don't really care. He's gone. He won't be back again.
Yes.
And whatever, I can't even remember the name of the thing now. There you go. You see, that's how effective it was. I don't remember it. I do remember some of the things that Gunter Steiner said through the year. Not necessarily about Mr. Story, but, you know, there you go. But no, to go back to the point, Netflix was vitally important for Formula One. And there's another one coming. There's one will be out, I believe, in February. Somebody who's seen it said it's going to be quite good.
Yes.
I know someone who's seen 10 of the 12 edition.
Oh.
It would be indiscreet to say who, but you can probably figure it out somewhere along the way.
I was going to guess and then watch your reaction. I won't do that. When's that coming out then? Does that come out in February? Oh, all right.
So in the build up to the championship, I think we'll have the next round of Drive to Survive 2 or whatever they call it.
Drive to Survive. This time it's personal. Anyway. So yeah, we haven't noticed any kind of drop off. I was really frightened that we were going to, you know, wake up in the 2019 series and no one would download the podcast. The interesting thing is, though, that we have had more growth in non-UK places than we've had in the UK, which, again, might be due to normal. Netflix. So our biggest audience is now the US.
Oh, that's good. There are across the world, things are changing. And not just that. I mean, podcasting is very much the in thing these days, whereas written word is not so much. People don't like reading too much because their brains hurt.
Yeah, reading's hard.
So that's why I think in the not too distant future, we'll all be communicating with smileys, you know. So.
We'll all be communicating in TikToks, Joe. Honestly, it is the future. I would love to just wrap up a little bit, just asking a few, not season review-y type things, but the things that have had the most fudge factor as far as our opinions on them go. I still cannot, apart from Max Verstappen, get my head around who has done the best out of the Red Bull kids. Because on the surface, it looks like Gasly had a disaster, Kvyat has been forgotten, and Albon is the success story. I just get the feeling that's not quite the whole tale. How do you rate the Red Bull kids' terms?
No, that is the right tale, basically. I think that, well, what we have to see is how Albon does next year, as he's going to be going to, you know, he'll then have done his year of training. And so he should be up to speed more than he was. Up against Max is going to be tough because Max is something special. I don't think anybody in their right mind can argue against that.
Agreed.
Gasly is a very quick driver, but he just wasn't happy in the big team environment. He's very happy in the small team environment. But unfortunately, in this kind of respect, you only get one chance. And I think that was his chance. And I think that's true of Kvyat as well. I don't see either of those two going anywhere, certainly not within the Red Bull empire, if somebody else picks them up later. But generally speaking, Red Bull drivers don't get picked up by others.
So what's the point in them occupying the Toro Rosso seats?
Because they like racing.
I meant from a Red Bull point of view.
This is what people forget sometimes. Fans often forget, well, why is he doing it? Well, they do it because they like going racing. These guys are racers. They like racing. Like, why does he keep going when he's got all the money in the world? Because he still likes racing. You know, and just we mustn't forget that. Why is Fernando Alonso wanting to get back into Formula One? Because he likes racing.
Well, I tell you what, this is why Mist Apex, as an organisation, we do as many wheel turny things as we can, just so that we can actually appreciate it. That's the fundamental thing, is that you have a wheel that points you in the direction, you have a stop and a go. So we do our online sim, we've gone and done events at a sim venue, had everyone there, and we go and do our karting. Because it's important to remember that the core of it is, it's fun steering a thing and then applying power. Speaking of which, Joe, what do we have to do to get you in a car? You must have some racer instinct deep down.
Not really, no. You have to add another 3 weeks to the calendar. If you could do that every year, then I'd be able to do more things. But as I'm a very busy chap going to races, and I'm also a grandfather in two different parts of the country. So I have families in three different countries all over the world. So It's very complicated being me. So, you know, you have to find time. I mean, I haven't found time to go on a proper rally in my entire life. David Richard said, you can go wherever rally you like, you know, come with me on a rally. And that was in the days when he was running things. And I just never got the time. And you never, when you do have a weekend off, if you haven't got grandchildren to look after or whatever, you know, one of the things you actually want to do is just go home and go to sleep.
Well, that sounds a lot like you saying you don't want to come miss Apex Karting on April the 25th, which is a Saturday.
I have no idea. I haven't looked at the calendar for next year. I don't even know when April the 25th, what's on that weekend.
There's no F1. There's nothing. It's not clashing with anything. You are our guest.
There's no F1, but what's it between?
We'll collect you from the airport. we'll have an office there for you to hand.
I'll mention it to my wife.
He handwrites.
Would appreciate the idea of me disappearing off for another weekend. So thank you.
We'll send a bouquet of cheese and wine to France. But anyway, if you do want to get involved, April 25th, email spannersready@gmail.com.
Where is that happening?
At Buckmore Park. Oh my gosh, how could I not mention the fabulous Buckmore Park, who look after us so well at our events? This big shout out to Adam Walker, who makes sure that we're treated like kings when we go down to Kent.
That's the one down on the A2, M2.
Yeah, it's the John Surtees one, and it's
the one on the road from Dover, actually, not very far.
And not to blow too much smoke.
I went past it just the other day, actually, several times, I think.
Well, you could miss it because it's completely surrounded by trees. So once you get into the car,
you see it from the motorway. You overlook it.
Oh, do you? All right. Yeah. But when you're there, you just feel like you're in this magical forest. And this is not an advert for them, sorry. But the weird thing about the track is it feels like a proper racetrack. Like they've tried to make it look like a F1 track. So you've got nice big red and white curbs that you go over. I love it. I love the track, and it's a thrill. Now I'm all excited about karting. Joe, tell us again where we can find all your stuff to keep up with everything you say and write.
Oh, goodness me.
Oh, come on.
Well, if you go to flatoutpublishing.com, you'll find most of it there. So, and I have lots of different products, including the podcast. And just have a look and see what there's lots of interesting things.
Well, I think it would be easier. Anyway. I think it would be easier just to go to gpplus.com. I think that would be the easiest place to find you.
You can do that, but then you don't see about the newsletter. You don't see about the fascinating fact books. You don't see about all this sort of stuff. So, and there's the blog, of course, Joe Blogs F1, which is where every day I'm doing a fascinating fact. I need to do another one for Christmas Day.
I've asked my wife if I'm allowed to get your newsletter as a Christmas present to myself, so I can be like an insider, so I can feel like I'm truly inside F1.
Well, you will be, yeah. If you get that, you will be inside, yeah.
Although, it has to be said, you have given us absolutely fantastic insights, and I thank you personally for your candor, because I get very frustrated sometimes with other F1 journalists who never want to rock the boat and they never want to give their opinion. So every answer feels like, well, you could say this, but blah. So I do want to thank you personally for always just going, no, I think it's this, I think it's this, I think it's that.
I might be wrong, but that's what I think. So, but people are used to me doing that. So, you know, let's say we do again, blathering away, you know.
And we might be wrong, but we do try to be first. We do try to make sure you have your podcast race review before your Monday morning commute. Very few podcasts do that for you. We have a great live chat stream that keeps us company on those streams, corrects us in real time, which is fantastic. And we get our edits and everything done in the hours after the race. So it's all ready for you when we wake up. And it would not be possible if it wasn't for the fantastic support of our patrons. So thank you so much to those guys as well. So thank you very much to Joe. And thank you to all the Missed Apex podcast panelists throughout 2019. This is definitely the last show of the year, I promise you. But we will be back on January the 5th. Looking forward to what we hope is a great 2020 season. Wherever I see you next, be brave, because wounds heal, chicks dig scars, but glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. Missed Apex podcast survives due to the kind donations of our patrons. Support Missed Apex podcast at patreon.com/missedapex. That's patreon.com/missedapex. You will get an ad-free RSS feed to add to your podcast app. You will also get bonus content where we have a bit more of a relaxed recording. We're not saving any special content. However, it is a little bit more personal, a bit more about the panelists, but there's also some good F1 chat in there as well. And of course, you'll be welcome to come and join us in our Slack chat community. From everyone here at Missed Apex Podcast, may all your penalties be black and white flags, and may all your apexes be hit. I feel alone.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.